Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I honestly... Man, this is big. This is big. Yeah, well, this is big with a B-I-G.
Bit BFG.
No, this is not BFG. This is B-I-G. Because today, all you listeners who are listening in right now...
Hands down our most requested guest.
He's our most requested guest. He has... And you're probably on your commute right now. So whatever you're doing, just hold on to your hats. Hold on to that rail. Hold on to the steering wheel. Hold on to your headphones. Hold on to everything. We have one of the world's... Oh, the UK's biggest comedians.
Well, actually, one of the world's.
One of the world's biggest comedians, actors, friend of ours. He hosted the Brits. He has sellout tours. He's in Hollywood movies.
He's best friends with The Rock.
He's best friends with The Rock and James Corden.
He trains with The Rock.
He trains with The Rock, as you're going to find out. Get ready for this, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jack Whitehall. You said it before me. That's so interesting.
Jack Whitehall.
When you lead into it with like a cheer like that, you're not meant to cut me off. You're meant to let me roll with it.
Oh, really? Well, you know, I just got there first.
Yeah, but why would you race me in a competition that we're trying to succeed to make it great?
I don't know. Just felt right.
All right. Well, here you go, guys. Hey, this episode is freaking exciting. Jack Whitehall, Hollywood movie star, big comedian. I mean, I'm his best mate, probably.
Well, actually, I mean, you always go on. You actually, everyone you meet, you tell them that he's your best mate.
No, I don't.
And that I never say anything, but I've actually known him for way longer than you.
No. Well, he's right. His sister's actually going out with one of my best mates.
Well, I know him.
Oh, you were trying to say that you dated...
No, I've known him for much longer than you. If it was a competition...
Oh, it's not a competition.
Because you think it is.
We want to give a big shout out to Now TV for sponsoring us, streaming service. They are fantastic. You guys rock.
Now TV, you're awesome.
You are awesome. Hey, so listen, enjoy the episode with Mr. Jack Whitehall. Buddy, I know you'll be listening to this. Thank you so much for coming on.
Jack.
Whitehall. Not only Jack, and I'm talking to you now, Jack, so you are listening.
He won't listen to it.
Of course he'll be listening.
He doesn't listen to his own work.
He does listen to it. He just, thank you for coming on. You're not only talented, you're charming. A lovely little combo to be with. Okay, here you go. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy it. Jack Whitehall. On the Private Parts Podcast.
On the Private Parts Podcast.
Enjoy.
Are we rolling?
Dude, we are freaking rolling in life, man. We're rolling in life. We're rolling. Well, you roll most evenings, if you know what I mean. But
jiu-jitsu, yeah.
Do you not do the sponsorship bit live?
No.
I only came because I wanted to hear you do the sponsorship bit.
Yeah,
I love it when you do that.
You do.
And you sound like you're about to crack up.
No, I'm not about to
crack up. And Franny really goes for it.
Oh, on the sponsorship?
Yeah, yeah, I always want to buy whatever it is you're selling.
Well,
you have that
gift. You're
not
the only one.
Jamie does not.
Firstly, every single thing that we sell on this, I love.
Yeah.
The reason why we sell it is because we go, God, that would be cool to sell. And that's the reason why we do it. You know, it's all authentic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even that sounds scripted.
No, it doesn't sound scripted. I've got no script in front of me. It doesn't look.
If I were to describe you in one word, I don't know if authentic would be.
How would you describe me then?
Inauthentic.
What do you mean I'm inauthentic? I'm authentic. I'm like, if I was like a product, right? I would be like.
But look at what you're wearing.
With those dodgy sweets.
No, I would not be. I'd be like a blender. I'd be a blender.
But so you're wearing practical. You're wearing a Yankees baseball cap backwards.
Yeah. Backwards.
I love New York and I love Yankees.
You've got a tattoo of a palm tree.
I love the beach.
Yeah. Right.
It's all authentic. Keep going.
Okay. And you've got what is that? What is that? The on your necklace. What is that?
It's a pendant.
It's a pendant of a face of whose face is that?
A little boy.
Why do you have a little boy's face?
Because you are a little boy and you'll never grow up. You're like Peter Pan.
Yeah, because I love little boys. That's why.
What?
Francis, please shut this down.
In terms of innocence.
Francis, you're the voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it is, that's the one moment of honesty. The one moment of of authenticity when you said that you loved little boys.
Hello everyone, welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sordid details of our lives. Joined us today, very exciting, Mr. Jack Whitehall.
Hello.
How are you, buddy?
Very good, thank you. It's nice to be on the Private Parts Podcast.
Have you been waiting for a long time?
I've been waiting for a long time.
The call-up.
Just plucking up the courage to text Jamie and beg him to get me on.
Do you know what it was? And this is true. I got a message and it was late at night and Blink comes up. Do you know,
Blink another of the products that you try and...
No, Blink is not another product.
Sorry, I thought that's something you've been endorsed
But with Jack and I, for some reason... Normally, when I get a text message, it's normally Jack. For some reason, we don't WhatsApp. We text each other.
Yeah, I'm quite old school like that.
So do you text other people?
Sorry?
Do you text other people?
No, he just texts you.
Yeah, I text everyone.
WhatsApp or anything like that?
I do a bit of WhatsApping, yeah.
Okay.
Receive the text on your Samsung phone.
No, my Samsung Galaxy, which you can get at the Carphone Warehouse. But I got this text came up, and it said, it was Jack Whitehall, and it said, just listened to the podcast with Tom Lucy. Freaking hilarious.
Hilarious. Really funny.
Really funny.
This is not going to be as funny as that podcast.
Yeah, well, trust me. We get into it, man. We start rolling.
The night is young.
That CCF stuff. I mean, it's niche material, but I am the perfect crowd for CCF-based banter. Private Lang and Lance Corporal Bull. I was in hysterics.
Yeah, but that's the funniest thing about it is that it is such... It's such a niche audience, but for some reason, people kind of grasped it and quite understood it and loved it.
And what have you?
I've been
to any of them?
Searching through podcasts to try and find one that talks about the big issues like the ranking system of CCF, and finally, I found you guys, and I was over the moon.
But wait, so I think that's how we should. So
I attacked the CCF at
school. You did because Marlborough College, weren't you? You were at Marlborough College.
Marlborough College, yeah.
And wait, and so you did CCF there as well.
I did CCF, yeah.
But you would have done the Navy. You would have been.
You
hardcore.
Can't do the Navy. Yeah, how do you do the Navy at Marlborough?
Do the Navy. Yeah,
we were landlocked.
What do you mean?
You can't do the Navy. You can just do the CCF.
No,
aren't you on the Kennet and Avon Canal?
Yeah, but you couldn't get a battleship onto that. No, we did the normal stuff like you did, like playing toy soldiers
We had RAF and Navy, and you could go fly planes. You could do like gliders and stuff.
Oh, so you were limited at Marlborough.
They also don't play rugby there, do they?
We did.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, but I didn't. But people.
I thought. I thought you just play hockey.
No, there was a lot of hockey, but I think there was people that were playing rugby
hockey,
as well. I was more.
Hockey was the worst. It used to hit my hand. Do you remember that when it used to like crack?
Yeah,
onto
that was.
So it was Marlborough very good at rugby.
I think they were, yeah. I had nothing to do with it, so I can't take any.
This is just a memory that's come back. I remember when I did. Did you ever go on those, like, so we talk about this with Tom Lucy, but you would do like an away day for like not the long weeks, but you'd do like away in like the field somewhere where you go and
the
camp.
Bracken Beacons.
No, but you do like a camp somewhere. Did you do that?
Your camp.
Yeah, I think so.
So we had that, and we had to do an ambush. We had to do a fake ambush where we had to lie in the mud or whatever it was and wait for a period of time until. The older CCF boys would come along and you'd jump them and you'd shoot them. And this was the shooting by other people. This is like practice for
when you get bullied.
Yeah, for when you get bullied that you can shoot
back.
Them.
You shoot the older boys.
But I remember we were doing this thing and we were laying down ready to ambush and we had our guns ready that had like caps in them, whatever they're. And we were lying down in the mud and we were waiting there like this. And we waited for literally about, I mean, it felt 2 hours.
Really realistic, probably.
Yeah, waited for weeks. We waited for like hours waiting for it. And then they went, oh, here they come. Up you get, man. So we all jumped up. And I went, the most exciting, I went to fire my gun and it jammed.
No.
I laid in the mud for 2 hours and then my fucking gun jammed.
Well, what did you do? You just pistol whip them?
What, with like, no, I just bayoneted them.
Bayoneted. Killed three people that day. And you got made a prefect. We attacked our CCF. It was right at the end of school and there was a boy who was very naughty who you maybe... He was a very mischievous man and he decided that he would get a group of us to attack like the senior members of the CCF. So we all put on balaclavas and we ran down with water bombs and we were throwing all these water bombs at
them. Classic.
And I stupidly asked my friend Alex if he wanted to join in the attack. So we then did the whole attack and there was obviously CCTV, but we were like, balaclava is absolutely fine. I was called into my housemaster's office and he was like, I know you were there. And I was like, no, I promise you, I'd had like an alibi all worked out.
What was your alibi? What alibi?
Down the charcoal grill.
Oh, sick. Okay.
And he showed me the footage of the CCTV and the problem is that was like as close to... like obese. Yeah, he was the biggest guy in the school by like a country mile. And so even in the balaclava, it was so obvious that it was him like thundering along, charging down, like also like miles behind anyone else. So then Alex got like made to fall on his sword and like dob everyone in.
He didn't tell
him.
He flipped.
What? Well, how? What, he interrogated? How did it happen?
Well, the house
water
was...
Water torture.
It was waterboarded.
It's quite intense. At
But this is the thing, I think. You know, you grew up... So we all, around this table... It's going to be a niche audience, but all around this table, we went to boarding school. What was your... Did you like boarding school, or did you not like it? Basically, what I'm saying, would you send your children to boarding school if you were able to?
Yeah, I mean, I did enjoy it, but I think it's like each kid has a different experience of it. And I know a lot of people that were there when I was there that hated it. And so you just have to wait and see what your child is like. And,
yeah, but how do you wait
but
to
I
see?
But I did enjoy, I had a great time. But people have always, when you say it, like,
cause it
especially
like
Americans,
yeah,
they're like, do you speak to your parents anymore? And you're like, yeah, no, I had a great time. It was like being on a sleepover every night. I had a great
But also Marlborough's a mixed school, so it's a bit different to...
I went to boarding school at the age of 8 years old. So were you 8 years old when you went to the Dragon?
No, I was a bit older. I was like 11.
Because you refused. Because you're like, I'm not going away from my parents until...
No.
Yeah, that was it. 100%.
No, I was just at another school and I was...
Oh, then you came as the new boy.
And then I came as the new boy.
Yeah, but I feel like boarding school is one of these places where like, it's such a weird concept. The fact that you are taken away from your parents and put into a school and you don't get to see them again. Firstly, when I went to boarding school at 8 years old, I wasn't allowed to call home for 2 weeks to call my parents. And then I was next to and I remember coming into the dormitory and had...
Is that a person?
Yeah. This is a person. was a kid in my dormitory in the bed next to me. And he would like shit his pants all the time. Actually, I was surrounded by poo. Okay. He had white fronts and he shat his pants. And then also, and you know, I was in his classroom, and this is no word of a lie, I was sitting behind him in his class, and this is like 8 years old, and he put his hands in his pants and pulled out, and he had shit on his fingers, and he rubbed it under his desk.
This is not Desert Island Discs, is it?
No, man, this is not Desert Island Discs. This is not where we go into deep. Yeah, it's true. That's literally what happened.
No, he chimped his own desk.
Yeah, he did it. But do you have your...
Oh, I was going to pour some coffee, but...
Pour it, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I don't want to think about...
But Jack,
Francis.
Where do you think your strongest memories come from? Is it from school time? Is it from your 20s? Is it from earlier? Where are your sort of prominent memories they come from?
Probably school and Marlborough and being there. And those are most of my... Where I made most of my friends that are still... My closest buddies.
And does that where most of your material comes from? Do you kind of resort back to those kind of periods where there was the ability to like have that fun, have that naughtiness, have all those things and kind of that's where you draw it from?
Yeah, I think now it is. It used to not be. I used to be quite sort of worried about it and talking about it and felt like being posh was something that I was sort of a bit embarrassed about, and going to a boarding school was maybe something that no one would relate to, and so I didn't want to talk about it, and I didn't want to draw on it for my comedy. So I tried to do
jokes about other things because
you're young, and I think
it's understandable. You know, there is a lot of inverted snobbery in, you know, this country, where people kind of think it's like you're supposed to feel ashamed of that, otherwise you're I guess there to be mocked, right? So I think I was actually saying this to Jamie. I remember coming to at a pub in Putney.
Yeah, that must have been very early.
It was quite a different routine to what you do now. Like,
what was the beginning,
there was like one or two jokes about being posh, but then it was like
it was mainly
more self-effacing about that.
I actually started off doing like almost like in character. I did, for a long time I used to go on stage in like a Parker jacket, like Kenny from South Park, and do like one-liners, very deadpan, not in my voice, like talk like that, and I did one-liners in a
Parker. So you played a complete role.
And then one night it was like the lights were so hot, and then I nearly passed out because I was just like sweating. And then I went through various incarnations, and then finally arrived at being a version of myself, which is what I am on stage now.
Yeah, but this is, okay, fine, this is the sort of scenario. But if you're, and you started out comedy like your buddy Tom Lucy, you started out really young, right? You started out super young. And I think that's the kind of fear. You start doing a certain type of comedy and you start building that up. How do you have the kind of like strength to kind of change that? Because surely if I was building up my image in the comedy world, you're building it up, you're a young guy, you're kind of meeting
people. Well, you are, Jamie, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. This is me, here I go. 17% sold at Loughborough. Gonna make it. But it's true, you know, you build yourself up, and you then, what made you change it? Because you weren't happy in yourself, or you
have to? Because you're finding your voice, and that's the big thing that people talk about when you first start doing comedy, is your like comic voice. And they, you know, even in the early days, like comedians and reviewers and people like that would always go, you know, you're very good and you can write jokes and you're confident on stage, but you haven't quite found your voice. And you don't know what that is. It's this weird, mysterious thing that people are saying to you. Yeah, people say you'll find your voice, and what your voice means is like, what's your angle? Where are you coming from? What makes you distinctive? It's hard to be playing a persona. It's hard to be playing a person that you're not, and it's hard to be doing material about stuff that doesn't resonate with you. And it's the same with any kind of writing. You write about what you know, and you write about truth, and the truer it is and the closer it is to heart, then the funnier it will be. Which is why I eventually started going, yeah, I'm going to talk about going to boarding school, I'm going to talk about real life experiences. And the more you talk about those tend to be the routines that work the best,
that resonate with people,
because they're coming from
truth. And so actually on that note, you know, now that you I'm assuming that you have found your voice.
I don't think you found your voice
just
yet.
Now. Just this moment.
I don't think
thanks to you two, I found my voice. I have been searching.
I was watching in the O2 in 15,000 people, I was like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
He hasn't got his voice.
I see what he's trying to do, but he hasn't quite found his voice.
He needs to come on a podcast and have a little look inside, and we'll find it.
We'll get into that soul of his.
Get to the root. No, but what I was going to say is now that you have found your voice, assuming you have. We don't know yet, but I think you have.
I was metaphorically like, just smearing my poo on the desk, and now
I'm
a beautiful swan.
How close do you think that your voice on stage now that you found is to, you know, you when you're joking around with your friends, or just, you know, your style of comedy when you're like amongst, you know, like, I mean, because there's the persona which you say you had when you first started, which you took on, and that was a kind of playing a routine or playing a character. But then now when you find your voice, is it more in line with what you feel like you are in real life?
It's still a persona. It's still a version of me. And I think it probably always will be a version of me. And the me on stage is not what I'm like in real life, which is why it's always a letdown to meet me or any comedian.
It's so true. When you meet him, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Whereas you, like, there's no expectation.
It's very much.
Disappoint. You get exactly what you expect.
Yeah, I think the difference is, Jack, which is that between you, it's not just my you are very funny in normal life, but you're on stage, you're just a more heightened, energized version of yourself. Yeah. The problem that I have is that I have a
with your comedy.
Yeah, this is my comedy roots. What
the one problem you have?
I strive for that, like, attention, right, and get the limelight. And so I have to almost heighten myself like a Duracell bunny, which is that there's sometimes at that point you have to step down from that, or you can't continue that. Otherwise, you sort of become you break in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, so for you, if you...
I was that, though. Well, that's what I mean. For years.
Yeah, but so how
and
did
And then
you...
I found stand-up comedy and I had an outlet for it.
I remember...
No. I just want to make clear, I was not encouraging you to do stand-up.
I freaking knew it.
I do not want to be held responsible for inflicting that upon the world.
Jack Whitehall just said I could do it.
I take it back.
This is it.
No, I take it back.
Don't take it back. No, I just heard it.
Oh, no, you're going to do a stand-up show now and I'm going to be blamed.
Wait, look, I'll give you some stand-up right now for you. Listen to this. Here we go. So,
that's how you're going to start.
No, but Jack and I had a very funny moment. We went to Berlin together for New Year's, and we had dinner. I think it was the night after New Year's, and we had dinner, and we had just found out that Jack was going to, well, you knew it already, but we were talking about you hosting the Brits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was trying to persuade Jack that I should be his warm-up. at the Brits.
Oh my God, I remember this now.
Yeah, you were probably deadly serious.
Oh yeah, completely serious. Yeah. Completely serious. I had this whole image that I was going to walk on stage before Jack and I was going to warm up the crowd there. And I had this whole vision that I was going to do it. And I was going to walk on stage and just laugh. And this was how it was going to work.
What were you going to say?
And he did it. He did it. I've got a video, I think, somewhere of you doing the like 15 minutes that you were going to do. And it was just...
Because Jack said...
I left the room when it came back and you had your penis out.
Yeah, I got naked as well.
That was where it ended. I thought this would be a great start to the Brits. Yeah. Welcome, Jack Whitehall.
Surprised they haven't started it like that.
On I'd walk, they'd all be like, what just happened?
But it's so funny. What Jack said, which is so true, you said to me, we spoke about that 15 minutes. You said, do it for 15 minutes. And I said, I can do 15 minutes. You forget when you're being an entertainer, when you're doing entertainment, how freaking long 15 minutes is.
It's a lot of stuff to fit in.
It's a marathon.
Especially when there's no laughter.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When people laugh, that tends to fill up a bit of time. But in your routine, it was just 15 minutes solidly of you. Which does really elongate it.
Oh my God. But also, before we get into
it, I'd rather have Partridge Green, or whatever his name is, doing the warm up than you doing his
Partridge
act.
Green.
Partridge Green.
But also, this the other thing that I learned from Jack when, and before we get into all your other stuff.
As comedians.
Yeah, but also the other thing that I learned from Jack, which I find hilarious, is when Jack found his sister smoking, he cried. Oh. He was so upset. He cried and he was at his party.
Yeah. This is why you can't do a podcast with people that know intimate details about your family.
It's so good. So what happened? What happened?
I just saw her smoking and I got really upset and I cried.
When was this?
I cried and called my parents. or call my mom. So I like dobbed her in.
I love how you called her parents, yeah, your sister.
My parents, no. Well, no, at that point she was dead to me. So they were her parents and my parents separately.
So what happened?
I called her up. I probably rallied her. You know,
you did. You sold her out.
I sold her out. I did.
And so what?
Live in ditches.
It was your party, wasn't it?
No, it was my friend Freddie Seiborn's party, and we were there. And I just turned a corner and I saw her smoking a cigarette and just burst out crying. And it was also like, it was Freddie's 16th.
So you're old.
16.
You're old. 16. You're old. Yeah, 16. 16. You're old.
16. So,
and you turn the corner. You're at a party. Most times at parties, you're kind of going like, oh, what girl can I like hook up with or whatever. You walk around the corner. You see your sister smoking. So you cry and then phone your parents.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. No, that's exactly how it played out. There's no way of dressing this up.
And what did your parents
say? Because I care about her so much.
Yeah, I get
that. I didn't call my dad. I just called my mum and I was crying. I was like, she's going to get cancer. And my mum was like, calm down. It's going to be fine.
Hey, everyone. We're going to come back with Private Parts in just 1 second, just after this.
Hey, that wasn't that bad, was it? Now let's get on with the podcast.
But it is amazing because your family is so close. And you are a really...
Oh, so close.
Yeah, what I
were
say?
So close,
so close until
that incident, and I haven't spoken to her since.
And you guys, and do you think that's the kind of recipe to some sort of success? The fact that you have a sort of that backboard, that kind of like
close knit family.
Yeah, do you think that's what really sort of drives people forward?
No, because I think there's a lot of people that are very successful and do great things when they have
no
families that are very dysfunctional.
Sure,
but I think maybe it's a huge by a base source of comfort for me. I mean, I would not know what to do without them. Like they're a very important part of my life. So,
and all very good sense of humor.
Yeah,
all good humored.
They are, and I think I draw upon them a lot, and they inspire me. And they're funny, and they're supportive, and they've got good sense of humors. And yeah,
because I remember seeing you when we went to the Brits and. Jack, I'm sorry, Francis, but it's true, but I'm like Jack's best mate, and which is 100% true. And Jack invited me to the Brits to sit
Can
on his
you
table.
Edit that bit out.
No, we're not editing that out. Okay. That's true. Oh, because you don't want other
people. Yeah, well, you could edit it out of this podcast, but he said it in every other one as well.
Leading up
so you
to
need
this
to
one.
Go back. You need to go back and edit.
They're already out there. They're already out there. Actually, posted it on my Instagram today. But the thing is, so
I blocked you.
You haven't blocked me. I've checked today. It's still there following me. Still right in there. And we went to, so we got the call up to, actually, if I'm going to be completely honest, I didn't get the call up. Someone had to drop out. So then I got the call in for head table at the Brits. And I remember seeing your mum before. And your mum, who's super lovely, I was talking to her about you going on stage. And she said, I've never seen Jack, and all, you know, Jack has, and we went to, you've done the O2, 15,000 people, you've done BAFTA in America, you've done everything like that, but she said it was the most nervous she's ever seen you.
Yeah.
To do that, but why was that? Why doing the Brits was it so nervous? Because surely that's a gig which, it's live and whatever, but what's different about that?
Any gig that's out of your comfort zone where it's not in your control and it's unknown quantities, those are the gigs that get you the most nervous. And also, just knowing that is an unplayable room, and it is something that I'd been told by everyone.
I guess because it's also you're playing a crowd, but also being filmed.
Yes.
So who are you playing to, the camera?
The
or
camera,
the crowd?
And that was the key. Just play to the camera, because James Corden, the producers, the director, everyone went, that audience will be drunk. Some of them will be listening to you, but that's not who you need to win over, because that audience is unwinnable over. They're there to watch a music concert. You're just there in between. On the stage talking whilst they're topping up their drinks or getting their seat back underneath the table. And so
their seat back from underneath the table.
Well, no, if they've been like dancing and, you know, up on the table.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Like rearranging whatever, their table.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're then doing comedy to that. So you just have to play it to the camera. And actually, it's a very liberating thing to know, because then you can do stuff that you wouldn't normally do to a room whereby you're playing to a crowd. So
wait, I didn't get that. So explain that again.
I'll explain that. If you're doing a joke to the O2, to an audience that is there, you have to do a joke that has the rhythm of a joke and a punchline that they will then laugh at. And
sorry,
the punchline needs to be...
But me and you, we get it.
As comics, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, as comics, you know, we get it.
As comedians, yeah. You need to give them a big, fat punchline and that's you laugh. Yeah, yeah. And then you will get the laugh. Because if you don't do that, or you do something that's slightly less within the rhythm of a joke, with a reference, for example, that's not everyone will get in the room, then you'll do it and there'll be silence and it will be notable that you've done a joke that hasn't landed. So with the Brits, like, then none of these are going to land. So I'm just going to say what I want. I'm going to make references to quite niche things that only like small amounts of the audience would get.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a joke about Ollie Murs hiding in the toilets of Selfridges, which I wouldn't have done if it was a room full of people, because I don't think enough of them would have known that story to find it funny. So I was just completely...
So you're hitting certain demographics throughout.
I was just like, I'm going to say what I want, and I'm going to do stuff that... They aren't jokes, that jokes that are sort of hidden into intros. I'm going to make references to things that are a little bit...
Because you're not
obscure.
Trying to win the whole room.
Because it doesn't matter.
Because it doesn't matter,
and then you do, and then I did it all to the camera, and it seemed to work quite well, because... that's really the audience that you've got to.
But weirdly, with that, I think that, you know, so you weren't playing the audience; you were playing the audience at home, right? However, I feel like, and this is not just saying it because you're on this podcast, we want to butter you up. I honestly believe this: you won over the crowd as well. Like, the crowd very much was engaged with what you were saying.
Yeah,
like you gave that joke, which is so good, about going, you know, hi Liam, hi Cheryl. We're sitting here. This is my... I'm going to just steal your joke. This is how you should have delivered it.
Okay.
So, hi Liam. We got Liam. About to say Gallagher. Liam Payne and Cheryl Cole here. Hi guys. How you doing? Why don't we give a little wave to the little guy at home, because they just had a baby? And he went, hi Niall. And the whole crowd laughed. It was a hit, right? Which is you're not playing to the crowd, but the crowd are listening to you.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, those ones are easy because as soon as they see Liam Payne and Shulko, then they start listening. So,
okay, so you,
once
you,
you've got a big enough name to like...
And that's why you went to me at one point. I knew it. Yeah.
And that was the only one that didn't land because they all looked on the big screen and thought, who's that? Okay, let's go back to moving my chair from under the table.
I got a message again from Jack, basically like, look, I want to do a little moment with you in the Brits, basically just making fun of you. I was like, put me on TV, of course, anything you want.
And you weren't there. You weren't there at your seat.
I wasn't there at my seat.
Yeah, so you left for the one moment when I needed you.
I was coming back from like the bathroom or something like that. I don't know what I don't you and Francis. Oh. No. I was coming back from the bathroom because I obviously it was like a break and having a pee. I was not doing cocaine in the bathroom. That's what you're alluding to, Francis.
He thinks the lady doth protest too much.
I came back from the bathroom. And suddenly I realized that I was, you know, it was my moment to be on television. I didn't really know what was going on. Jack was being pulled from every angle because, you know, you just had, you know, a good friend of both of us sort of helping you out and directing the entire thing and doing everything. So I was brought to this chair and there was a one-shot camera there. And I didn't know how wide the shot was. So I didn't know if I was in shot, if I wasn't in shot. So I was sitting on this chair and suddenly went 3, 2, go. And Jack started talking and he didn't know if I was in shot. So I just sat there, mute, not doing anything, completely static.
I think I saw it, and it looked like you were trying to like jump in and say something.
Yeah.
Well, just as the camera drifted off, you saw the hand go down the back of the trousers towards the table, and I was like, no.
I'm wiping shit on it.
Yes, Jamie, we didn't need that bit. That's the bit that the listener will fill in.
They don't.
You just infer. You don't need to do the whole...
In comedy, you need to finish the joke.
No, you don't. In comedy, you don't need to spell out the joke. You can just insinuate.
But I think also the biggest question, speaking of that, the biggest question you must have been asked
of
is...
what? Back to the Brits. Okay.
But the biggest question you would have been asked, and you probably asked this the entire time,
don't flatter yourself.
As a comedian...
This is probably the biggest question.
This is the biggest question. No, it's the most. I think it's probably the most common one you're asked. Is you know, the flops that you have and the moments that you have in your career that you realize that you've bombed or whatever happened. You've been through those, and I think for people who listen to this, who are aspiring comedians and all these kind of people, that happens to freaking everyone. As Tom Lucy said, you know, he said it took him 2 years to become okay, decent at what he was trying to do. And have you had a moment in your life where you're like, this is absolutely shocking?
Oh yeah, so many. And it's like the gigs where you tank are the ones where you learn the most. This is a Jerry Seinfeld quote, which I can't remember the actual quote, but it's about learning more from the gigs that you fail than the gigs that you succeed at. And it's so true. And I've had so many gigs where I've absolutely tanked.
Yeah, but is there one?
I did a corporate in Birmingham Arena, but it was not like an arena crowd. It was like literally maybe 10 tables in an arena, which was, I walked in, I was like, this is unplayable.
It was like a car, they were launching
some cars, so there were a load of cars in one half of the arena, and then 10 tables at the other end, all old white-haired men in black tie having dinner, and I was their after dinner speaker, and this was before I'd done much stuff on TV. They hadn't got a clue who I was. They were just like a load of boring like car salesmen in Birmingham, and I went on and I had to do half an hour contractually, so then you have to hit your half hour, and as we spoke about earlier, when there's no laughs, you get through it all a lot quicker. I did my jokes and I was done within like 20 minutes. So then I'm trying to like pluck old jokes out of my head and trying to remember some shit that I can just waffle on with. And the worst element of it was that there was the big screen monitors were up. They didn't need the big screen monitors. There were 10 tables. Everyone could see me. I didn't even need a mic. I could have just said it and they would have heard. But they had the big monitors on, but the monitors were also on a delay. So I was doing these jokes. They were not landing. And then I could see myself moments later doing the joke, seeing it not landing and seeing my face just like crush and my soul like ebbing away from me, my eyes just glazing over. It was horrible.
So it's like a delayed response.
It's a delay. You're watching yourself die back on a big screen.
So not only
in
did
the
you
room.
Feel it.
It's like an out of body experience. So that was pretty horrendous. But there's, you know, a lot of awful gigs, but as you said,
those are the ones that you have to sort of push through. And that
gigs with no microphone, that's like the only thing you need as a comedian is a microphone, and once you have the
and jokes,
but the microphone is the bare minimum that you need, because if you go to a pub and they haven't provided a microphone, you are just a madman in the corner of the pub shouting at people, and that's what I have been on occasion. I do gigs, you turn up, they'd have no PA system, they'd be like, yeah, this is the first time we've run this gig, and the guy that was going to bring the mic, his van broke down, so you're just going to have to go on in the corner, and then you're stood in the corner of a pub. Half the drink is there, just there to have a drink. They didn't know there was a comedy night, and you're just there, stood in the corner in your parka jacket.
Also, you look more mental because you're in your parka jacket, trying to be like,
oh, yeah. What's wrong with him? He's having some kind of nervous breakdown.
Oh my god! Right, on that note, Francis, let's have question of the week.
Question of the week.
No, that's not question. No. This is the biggest question. This is our format.
Let me think of one.
You have it in your head. I know you do. You're pretending. I just saw you looking at your phone, and now you're pretending to be smart. You're showing off.
All right, okay. Parthenophobia, what is it?
Did you just pluck that?
Yeah. So, what is it?
Jack, go.
Answer is the phobia of paths.
No, Parthen. Parthen.
Oh, Parthen.
Parthenophobia.
Fear of the Parthenon.
Oh, that's a very good guess. But it's incorrect. I will.
Do you
have one?
Yeah, of course I have one. Well, you just
is that your so that's your answer.
Parthenon.
Well, no, because you told me it's wrong now, so I can have another one.
Parthenon.
Parthenophobia.
Parthenophobia.
Actually,
it's a fear. It's the fear.
It's why a lot of people are afraid of you.
I know. Shush. I was going to freaking say that. It's the fear of someone with too much enthusiasm.
No. All right, that's your answer. So,
Jack, what's yours?
Fear of...
Stop saying no, then I'm going to pick another
fear
one.
Fear of fantasists.
Fear of fantasists.
Don't say if it's right or wrong, okay? I'm going to go for fear of the path they're going to choose in life, metaphorically.
Parthenophobia.
Parthenophobia. Fear of their path in life.
But it's P-A-R-T...
Oh shit! What's spelling? What the hell? My dad and I are both dyslexic. My dad's worse than me, and he was writing a letter once, and he turned to me and asked me how you spell people. I thought it was funny. I used that on stage as well.
No, yeah. Don't open with it. Maybe tuck it in the middle of the set.
With that, straight down.
Tuck it in the middle of the set.
Straight on, no intro. No intro at all. Francis, you going to tell us in part two?
I'll tell you in part two.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
You've got your diary now.
Got my diary, Jack. Do you know, so you've listened to this, so basically...
I've never got to part two.
What?
Because the part one with Tom Lucy's was very long, and I was listening to it in the gym. And so I can't only do
like
45 minutes in the gym.
It's 30 minutes.
No, it was longer the first half.
No, what? You didn't even listen. What did you do? You finished and then go to the sauna?
Yeah, I'm not listening to it in the sauna.
Why not?
You can't listen to things in the sauna, can
you? Why can't you? Do you anything you want in the sauna?
Can you actually?
Yeah. Can you do whatever you want in the sauna? Are you one of those people that go and do you have
Not anything you want. Don't listen to Jamie.
I actually swear to God.
There's certain saunas where I think.
But were those the ones that you frequent, Jamie? Yeah. What, in North London? Or?
I swear to God.
That Soho sauna you always go to.
I don't go to Soho sauna. But I have actually... I was in a steam room once. You know when it's freaking steamy?
Oh,
And I've relieved myself in it.
You said you did this in a... in a sunbed as well. You said you relieved yourself in a sunbed.
I think I have done that as well.
I was in a sauna in... where were we? In Germany. I was with my parents and...
you went to
I was
sauna
with my
together.
Mum and we went to the swimming pool in the hotel and there was a sauna there and we went into the sauna and we didn't realise that it was like a naked sauna and this Norwegian guy came in and he was like completely naked. Like big paunch and everything out and he sat down and he started talking to my mother and my mum will just like talk to anyone. I was like, don't talk to the guy with his dick out, please. This is already so weird. And then they were talking for a bit and then he looked over at me and went, hey, you're a lucky guy. I was like, I just burst. I couldn't stare it. So I had to like run out.
I think he was
angling for a bit of...
Have you used that in your stand-up? Because I'm going to steal it.
You can have that.
Can I have that one?
Yeah. I was naked in a sauna once. And I went up to Jack Whitehall and his mum.
Right, my diary.
Every story of you is you naked.
It's always. Saturday. I went to a wedding today and I still find them a bizarre concept. Now, I get the marriage ceremony in front of your friends where you can confirm your love for one another. However, the party afterwards now seemed like a competition to see who can throw a better party. And you can never get it right. If your party is too big, people criticise it. And if it's not big enough, it's still the same. The only way to get round it is if you throw a small and quaint one and then people describe it as cute in a patronising way. Do you not agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I hate it when like a wedding party gets out of control and you have people like ending up like swimming naked in ice buckets and stuff like that.
I've never done that.
Yes, you have. I've been sent a video of you at a wedding, naked, like in an ice bucket.
I got
it's the most horrendous video. It's like, this is someone's special day. This is the day.
There was an ice bucket and I thought it was a wise option to get into it, so I got naked into this.
There's a tiny ice bucket.
And then started pouring red wine all over me.
Stuck in it.
Yeah.
You legend.
yeah. It was sweet. Talking about that, how many best man speeches have you done?
Quite a lot.
How many?
Three.
You've done three?
Yeah.
So do people ask you to be the best man because they're like, well, I'll just get Jack Whitehall to do a gig.
Well, it sometimes does feel like that.
No, I don't think so.
Quite a lot of pressure if you do a best man speech as a comedian. Too much pressure.
You have a very close knit of friends, so that's probably...
Because you've basically got to write a whole new routine specifically.
Yeah, if you do a bit of material, everyone smells it a mile off. So you have to do stuff about them and but it's that's a chore. I'm going to do some new gags and I'm having to do stuff about this guy.
I want to do that
sauna routine. Instead I'm having to say sincere things about someone that I love.
We
can't do that.
There's a guy, a friend of ours called Rafe, who is organising.
You've got a friend called Rafe.
He's organising our tour for us. And France and I did a rehearsal down at his house the other day, and he was talking about his 30th party, and he asked to give a speech, who's a friend of his. The reason why they're friends is that he also did his tour, around the country, talking to him. And got up, and he had a couple of drinks. and he started giving the talk and it was going nowhere. And so he suddenly just turned to hit the material he was doing on tour. And Rafe obviously knows the tour. So he was sitting there going, "You're just giving the talk." And trying to relate Rafe to it.
No.
Which I thought was genius.
Crowbarring in old cricket anecdotes.
Yeah.
Have you been asked to be best man?
Not yet. Not saying that I will, but not yet. Not yet.
Yes.
Done a speech?
But I didn't do a speech, but actually that they're not married anymore, so it's fine.
Oh my god.
Well, there we go.
So you might get another chance.
That's a sign for Francis. Also, if I'm
honest, I'd have you on greeting in seats.
Oh yeah,
I think you'd be great at that.
Oh yeah, well,
where would you where would you have me?
In the car park.
No, what? Oh, parking cars and then no, coming
just,
in as an usher.
No, just
got
in
it.
A car, in no, the car park.
No,
locked in a car. In the back of a car with a little bit of the window down so that you can breathe.
What, with a straw?
Yes, just in the back of a car, car park.
I'm up there.
Francis, front of house.
No, I'm up there, straight up there, holding your hand, patting you on the back.
Holding his hand?
We're getting married.
We're getting married. Also, if I'm honest, I still don't think I remember past a dinner until I look at the photos and I see that I give a piggyback to the groom, danced with the mother-in-law, and was in every photo in the photo booth. However, I'm competitive, so if Ellen and I ever get married, our wedding will be the most gigantic experience ever. Can't wait.
But it's always the bride's parents who pay. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's not for you to say that, is it?
Well, who knows? I don't know. Right.
Shall I give you a little... I don't want to take too much time trying to find it, but because it's the best photo ever.
What is it?
Which was when I was best man to my friend, and he had two other best men, and they all had like proper Essex tans, and I had not got the memo that I had to do the Essex tan. And I mean,
is it good? Can we post
you
it?
You post it on the thing. It's
we're
going to
post it on
photos.
Our private parts.
We'll post
Instagram.
It on the private parts Instagram.
We're going to post it on private cards.
It's sweet.
Go and check it out. While you do that, stick around because we've got part two. Jack is still here. He's going to give loads more gags.
He will be listening to this part two.
Yeah, so.
He
doesn't have a choice.
And also, weirdly, it does feel a bit like a sauna in here. So.
Yeah. Well, let's get naked. See you in part two.
Lucky guy.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.